she was gonna keep. Oh yeah, alright, take it easy baby, make it last all night. She was an American girl.
This is Deborah Craddock, a podcast where we sit down with everyday Americans and hear their extraordinary stories. I'm your host, Deborah Drucker. Come along with me as we discuss those things that we were always told not to talk about: politics, religion, and more. I promise you'll be inspired and have your mind opened by the end of this episode.
Well, it was kind of cold that night. She stood alone on the balcony. Yeah, she could hear the cars roll by out on 441, like waves crashing on the beach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Deborah Craddock. Today on Deborah Craddock, we have the privilege of meeting Audrey Prosser. Audrey has come a long way, from a tobacco farm in South Carolina to the coast of Southern California. She came from a world with little opportunity for women to becoming an accomplished businesswoman, activist, and community leader. Audrey is the longtime owner of a real estate company in Laguna Beach, California. She has served as the president of the Democratic Club of Laguna Beach and as president of Women in Business Orange County and International. Audrey has blazed her own trail, refusing to be silent in the face of injustice, intolerance, and oppression. She has forged her path with grace as a role model for women and minorities. Let's find out how Audrey became the remarkable person that she is. How you doing today, Audrey?
I'm great. How could I not be great at Southern California?
Exactly. And I want to talk to you about how you came to be in Southern California. You are in Orange County now, but you're originally from South Carolina. That's quite a distance. Who did you grow up with there in South Carolina?
I grew up with four brothers and a sister, the household that we just kind of took care of each other, the siblings and a father.
And where are you in that lineup of siblings?
I was the youngest.
Okay, so you're the baby of the family. What was that home life like?
It was probably not a traditional home life. My mother died when I was five, and so we were kind of independent from the very beginning, kind of taking care of ourselves and each other, the siblings. I had wonderful brothers and sisters, a sister, and I had a father that was absent a lot because he was out dating and not around a lot.
After your mother passed. And what did your mother pass of?
Heart disease.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And did your older sister then kind of assume the responsibility of mom?
No, actually, my older brother, my sister graduated from high school and got married. And so my older brother was really better than most mothers.
Oh, nice. So tell me, I know you lost your mom, so that couldn't have been so happy. But was it an overall happy upbringing when you guys acclimated to the loss?
I think early on it was. It was lonely because my brothers, you know, as they were older than me, and so they weren't always around. But I had a neighbor, Miss Lily, and I went to her house a lot, and she was very good to me. She had a daughter that was developmentally disabled, and just kind of childlike, and she really took care of me because, I mean, it was like having another playmate to have her daughter. But as I grew older, a lot of rules started setting in as to what the expectations were of a girl.
Especially a girl in the South, huh?
Yeah. There were a lot of limitations. I had to behave like a girl. I couldn't be a tomboy anymore. Couldn't play on the tractor or climb the haystack.
And what era was this? What date would you put this at when you were a young girl in the South?
I was born in 42. So starting in 47 was, you know, where my life kind of changed.
I can imagine the 40s or the 50s in the South for a young lady was a very different time from now. When you were growing up in that household, was there anyone else who helped you out?
Yes, we had a wonderful Black woman, Lila, And she helped with the house chores, and she was totally unconditional love and happy, even though she had very little resources and, of course, didn't have any respect as a human being in general in the South.
Because she was a woman of color.
She was a woman, and she was a woman of color, which were treated less than human in the South. When we had our dinner, as typical of the South, a Black woman was not allowed at the dinner table with the white people. They had to sit at a different area, and she sat out on the back porch to eat her dinner, and I really wanted her to come sit with me. And my father was adamant that no, using the N-word, would sit at the dinner table. And I went back to the back porch, and I took her by the hand, and I was literally physically dragging her into the dining room. And she was saying no all the time. No, 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 I like eating out here. And I drove her to the table, and my father, I don't know if it was because Leela was there, but he stopped resisting, and she sat down at the table. But that was the last time that I remembered it. She sat at the table, first and last time.
So your father was the proprietor of this tobacco farm, and you had many people of color working on the farm?
Yes, there were. That was the labor. It was very labor intensive, and it was done by people of color.
So I'm going to assume, being quite a landowner, that you were from a family of means.
Early on, we were, because it was really a money crop. But as the years went on, the government restricted how much you could grow, and the people of color migrated to the north, and we didn't have the labor, the cheap labor. So later on, actually, we were. I always said I thought my father was stingy until I was about 30 years old, realized we were poor.
So growing up in this household with so many siblings, were there any politics ever discussed, or did politics play a role in that home, maybe around the dinner table conversation? Or
no, not politics as we would speak of it today. The politics then were the Black people being out of their place, or that's as deep as politics got. But I never was even aware of politics until I was a young adult.
And what about religion? Was there any faith in your house?
My mother was a holy roller, but after she died, I went to the Free Will Baptist Church because my neighbors could give me a ride there. But my father didn't go. My brothers didn't have to go, but I had to go to the church, which had a lot of rules. In fact, I rebelled because everything that I was a sin.
Okay.
Maybe that started my political career, and I was unaware, but it was always, that's not right. You know?
Okay, so that leads me to my next question, which is, at which point did you discover that you were gay?
Actually, I knew I was different from the time I was probably 7 years old, but I didn't know what. But I knew it was something I shouldn't talk about. So I was actually probably 17 years old before I really understood that there was a gay.
How did you feel internally? What were you going through?
It was lonely because I didn't know any other gay people. I played on a softball team and met some lesbians on the softball team, but I didn't relate. I felt like I was alone. They were a pretty rough crowd. And it really frightened me that, like, I'm not that, you know. I don't want to be that. So I didn't understand myself. And for the first 14 years in that relationship, we didn't have any other gay friends. We just kind of lived our own life, and I played sports and worked.
When you say we, did you have a partner then?
I had a partner.
Okay. And how did you meet that other person, that first person that was your partner? As a young woman?
At a softball game. She was attending a softball game I was playing in.
And so did anybody acknowledge that you had this partner?
I was not living at home. I had an apartment. And it was just the beginning of a relationship. So there wasn't any talk about it.
And at which point do you come out to the family?
I never came out as far as saying I'm gay because it wasn't a topic. I don't think, I know it may sound strange, but it was like that something happens in New York City. I had a partner that we shared everything, our home, and I was never secretive about it, but it was just not a topic of gay that you talked about.
Okay, so at some point I see that, you know, you graduate high school at 17 and you go to work. Did you bypass college?
I did.
Okay.
Until later on, I took a lot of real estate classes. And I got quite an education there.
And that's how you are the successful real estate person that you are today. We have that in common. I left high school at 18, not 17. Just I was one of the older kids in the grade. And I went straight to work for my father's company. I also took some courses, just general sales courses on the side. So I hear you. Determination takes us a long way. I see that you went from high school into work. You did clerical work at an auto dealer. Then you worked for a bank. And was it then at the age of 20, you moved to Bakersfield? What brought you to Bakersfield, California?
I had a brother that was in the Marine Corps, and he married a woman from Bakersfield. So he stayed here, and he was always saying there's jobs here. You know, you can come here because there was no path to success in the South. I didn't realize it. I just kept trying to find it.
Was he the only brother that was in the service?
I had three brothers that were in the service, one not.
Oh, so three out of four.
Yes.
Beautiful. Well, that's a patriotic American family, so I give you gratitude for that. What happens from there?
I got a job, and I really got an education because I started in a retail store and had a manager that really believed in me. And I kept doing different jobs, as from clerk to office manager to then I was recruited to come to work in the district offices. And I was there 5 years total with that company, and I kept getting promotions and assistance to the operating manager and the district manager. I was just his go-to, but my pay scale was still, and my job classification was stenographer because that was the highest job classification they had for a woman. So I thought I had learned a lot on credit and that I would start my own business, and I didn't have the money, an advertising budget, so I go to a small town to start my own business.
And that small town was back across the country in Florida, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And why Florida?
Not having a degree in economics.
you could set up over there.
I had vacation there, so it was a good experience for me in Florida. And I didn't even know where I was going. Just landed in a small town and decided to stop there. I had a partner that I came to California with, and I didn't want to spend our savings, which we've been saving for years planning this. So I wanted to rent a house, but I couldn't find a rental. It was November, which everyone in the Northeast lands in Florida in November. So I had to buy a house. And that really was the beginning of building some equity.
Okay. You moved to Florida with your partner. And what is it that you set up in Florida?
It was a craft store, because there's a lot of elderly people in Florida. I set out to be a hobby store, but my stock didn't come in, thank goodness, and my competition came in the store and made fun of me not having all these craft supplies. So very soon, it was a craft store.
And are you crafty?
No, I was trying to make a living, and I learned some of the crafts just so I could teach my customers and sell them supplies.
Okay, and then from the craft store that you've set up, I see that you move into working for a title company. Is that where you kind of stick your toe into the business of real estate?
Yes, I got exposure to the role of real estate agents and the role of the attorneys, because everyone got around the table and I handled the closings and ballots and wrote the checks. And I was writing very big checks to these realtors that didn't understand the closing statement.
And did you get excited by this? Was this something that interested you?
It didn't really interest me at the time because I didn't want to be in sales. I didn't like sales. I didn't think it was an honest profession. And so my partner just signed me up for a college class. She believed that I could do it.
For a class in real estate?
Yes.
Okay. And I see that for someone who does not believe or like to sell things, that you sold 250 homes in 1 year.
I did the last year in Florida.
Well, I guess you had a natural aptitude for sales then, for someone who didn't really think that that was something they were going to do.
Well, I learned that service and taking care of people was something I really liked to do. And so it really paid well off in my business because it is a service industry. And one family would buy 11 houses from me.
Wow. That's a good client. So after 3 years, I see that you then moved back to Southern California. Why Orange County, Audrey, when Orange County has always been such a Republican stronghold and you being such a Democrat?
Well, I kind of accidentally ended up in Orange County because that's where my job took me. And that's where I had friends. And it was hard in the beginning. But thankfully, now there are more Democrats than Republicans in Orange County. So it's a testament that if you wait long enough and work hard enough, you can change it.
Right. And you opened your own real estate in 1995 here in Laguna Beach, and it still exists today. Yes?
Yes.
Nice. And how's real estate going right now?
Well, it's not much inventory as everyone, you know, complains about, but I had a great year and probably the best year of my career in 2022 because all of my clients that bought property from me 30 years ago was selling it.
Congratulations. So how did you ultimately arrive at your political perspective?
Really, when I became more aware as when I got in the work world, probably in the 80s, when I got very active. I was always protesting or objecting to something or writing letters. Or I appeared in the first Pride Parade in Long Beach, and that kind of outed me. And I became president of Women in Business. And then I was recruited by the Human Rights Campaign to serve on their board of governors in Washington, because they knew I was an activist in the area.
So at which point in this personal life that we were discussing of careers and moving back and forth, at which point did you meet Deborah, the person that you are married to today?
I met her about 8 years before we got together. I sold her a home. And when she got divorced from her partner, I was single at the time, too, and she came back to me to buy more real estate.
Okay, so you met Deborah here in Orange County?
I did.
Okay. So you've been with your wife, Deborah, for 23 years. Obviously, you couldn't have been legally married for 23 years. I know that you fought against a California proposition that was meant to ban gay marriage. How does someone fight against a proposition?
Well, Gavin Newsom finally stepped forward and called his office and said, we're marrying people tomorrow.
Gavin Newsom, who's the governor of California, was then the mayor of San Francisco.
Yes. So that set off a firestorm of putting a proposition on the ballot, Prop 8, to prevent gay marriage. And we got very involved in that, and I ran the campaign out of the Laguna Beach Democratic Club fighting the ballot measure. We organized. We had people from all over the county coming to us to get signs because none of the Democratic Party had planned on this, and they hadn't planned on buying signs. So we raised money, put it on our credit cards or whatever. We bought 14-foot billboards, probably 50 of them. They were busing in, yes, Protect Marriage from Utah. There were buses arriving in Dana Point, and they would get on street corners. So I would get a call that they're on this street corner, and we had volunteers that would run out and take those billboards to our kids that were standing there. And that gave us a lot of visibility and a lot of press. the press would come when we had balancing protests.
So finally, gay marriage becomes legal in the state of California. And how quickly do you marry your partner?
Actually, I was on an RV trip, and she was at work, and I had to, because we had been on the cover of the Orange County Register so much, they called and said, well, have you proposed to your partner? And I said, well, no. And they said, well, when are you going to do that? Have you got plans? And I'm trying to avoid it, because we really weren't fighting for marriage. We were fighting for all the rights that went with it and the right to get married. But I was trying to avoid his question. I said, well, I don't know. You know, it's hard to plan a wedding. And they said, well, you must have thought of where you would propose. And finally it went on. And I said, well, maybe I'll propose, you know, in Orange County Register. And I was 40 miles up the Rogue River on a payphone, no way to reach Deborah. And they called her at work before I could even call her and said, well, you've been proposed to. She said, well, I suppose we're kind of married anyway. So she was quick on her feet.
Very cute.
So then we got married as soon as we could.
And, okay, so you mentioned that you were on a road trip. Tell us about that hobby of taking road trips and how it exposes you to the real America, I like to say, between the coasts of California and New York.
Yeah, that's quite an education when you look at it that way, Deborah. I've always liked the outdoors and, you know, grew up on a farm and I live in a city. So I don't know if it brings me back to nature is always peace to me. And, but yes, it is quite different. I know we were in Idaho and we were just sitting out and this young couple walked their dogs. And of course you're saying hi to the dogs. And I said, yeah, we feel, you know, safe here. And they said, safe. We're not worried about that. And went on to tell me about all the stuff you could drink, the bleach or whatever it was you could drink.
Oh, this is during COVID?
Yes.
Okay, where the president of the United States at that point had said some crazy things about what could cure COVID or
yes.
kill the bug. Okay, got it.
So then the next morning, we look out the other window, and there's an elderly gentleman with a gun on his hip. And I'm like, oh, we're not in California anymore.
So when you're traveling in your RV, are you engaged in like just activities of being outdoors in nature, or are you going from place to place and being involved in any of the political activities in those areas? Tell me more. Is that just a escape for you?
Well, this last trip was to the national parks. I always try to take in the national parks wherever we're. And then Albuquerque for the balloon festival.
Oh, I've never done that. Is it amazing?
You have to do that. It was amazing.
And so, did you go up in a basket?
No.
Okay.
I had been before up in wine country.
Wow.
It's really unbelievable.
I love that you have this journeyer spirit inside of you. And then let's get back to all the activities that you have been involved in, your activities for the LGBTQ community. What do those entail?
Well, when I was on the board of the Human Rights Campaign, we started a business council. This was prior to marriage, which domestic partner was what we were. And mostly your partner was not insured if you worked for a corporation. So we started a grading of Fortune 500 companies. So that was one thing that I did. I did fundraising for them for their efforts, lobbying. That's where I really got politically connected and thought I could make a difference. I brought women in business just to see how Washington works and how to access the government and how to access the agency that let contracts for minorities, which was the Small Business Act back then. 2% contracts went to females.
That's all, huh?
Yeah, 2%. Now, they passed a bill that they would put some kind of goal to have it, and it still wasn't 5% 10 years later. So
wow.
But we met with the Department of Navy. Maxine Waters was fabulous. She would set up a room for us and bring us all the speakers we wanted, whatever National Institute of Health. One year we wanted to meet the female ambassadors and she arranged for 9 female ambassadors from other countries to come talk to us about what the conditions were for women in their countries. And so that really was when I learned how to lobby, how to go in and make your case and repeatedly do it, even when people you knew they were not going to support you.
Kudos to you, Audrey. You're amazing. And I know now you are currently serving on the Advisory Council of Women for American Values and Ethics, aka WAVE. Now, I remember that that group was founded because I went to their initial, I think it was an initial meeting right after the Women's March. I think it was that 2016?
2016, right after President Trump was elected. So it actually legally became formed in early 2017. Right now, our big issue is schools banning books. And so we have a monthly meeting. We support candidates that support our values. So we raise money for the candidates. We do campaigning for candidates. My duty was, for the first 4 years, was chairing fundraising. And I believe we've raised $1.5 million to support mostly Orange County candidates.
Bravo. Bravo. Now, speaking of politics, how do you feel about the state of America right now?
I feel like if you're ever going to be an activist, this might be your last chance. We cannot sit on the sidelines and assume that this horrible thing won't happen, because it is happening. But I believe that it is still opportunity for us to take our country on the right path to where everyone can live here safely and you can live the American dream.
Beautiful. And so you do have optimism.
I think we're going to kill it in this election.
Okay, so you're optimistic that the future of America is still bright.
Yes, I am, because people are really getting involved. The young people are getting involved. There's always a cause and effect. So the Supreme Court taken away a precedent of 50 years of the right to a woman to choose her own health care really got a lot of people involved. Look at Ohio. A major majority took back the right to choose the health care for their own bodies when they tried to make it illegal to get an abortion there. So that's all women. There are people involved in politics that never, ever wanted to be before, because they have really been awakened by this.
This ignited it, huh?
When you lose something, I think it wakes you up more than if you've, you know, just kind of fighting for it all along.
Right. Well, also, if it affects you directly, it definitely makes a difference, or affects your daughter or your sister or your dear friends. You know, a woman's bodily autonomy is foremost in my mind and is one of the issues that really ails me most. And I think everybody's got to get out there and be active, because, you know, as tired as we feel, and I know at times I feel really tired, now's not the time to get lazy. So let's keep going. Is that the issue that is foremost in your mind or concerns you most about the future, is women's rights to their own body, or is there something greater than that on your shoulders?
That is only an entry level.
Okay.
They're taking away that right. Of course, LGBTQ has always been under attack, calling for killing of your opposition, all of those things. But what's most obvious is the Supreme Court decision to overturn precedent law that was settled for 50 years. And yet they roll in another case and say they didn't want to go against precedent. You know, so.
Well, I have a question for you. In your years of life, have you ever seen such a blurred line between separation of church and state?
It's gotten much worse over the years, to the point that there is no separation now. In Huntington Beach, where I live now, the Calvary Church, it's all their electeds on the city council. And they're doing the most horrific things, denying Black History Month, denying, of course, the LGBTQ flag, took that away, denying Women's History it's the church is really just another political party now. And I don't understand why they're not taxed on it.
Yes. Spoken from a woman from the Bible Belt South. And this is the most you've seen the line so blurred between the separation of church and state. That really says something, Audrey. So what is your hope for the great future of this country?
My hope is that there is a big change in the way our government works, that there's some ethics for the Supreme Court that they have to abide by. And I hope that our Congress people and senators have more responsibility to the things that they say and do and don't do. So my hope for the future is that there will be a real revelation there, and we will get back to really believing in the American dream that everyone makes up this country.
And what's next for you? Are you going to take a RV trip, or do you have some other political fight set in front of you? What's going on for Audrey?
Well, the political fight right now is this election, doing everything I can, donating as much as I can to candidates, canvassing. But the pleasure part is I am leaving for Nova Scotia in our RV.
That's quite a drive. Southern California to Nova Scotia?
Yes. It's probably going to be a 10,000-mile trip altogether. That's the problem. You have to be gone for so long. That's the drawback. So at 300 miles a day, we'd like to take a couple of days in some places, because I like to travel and have destination, have things to do and see in an area, and then move on to the next destination.
And are you the driver?
Both of us drive, but I'm a nervous rider, so I drive more.
I'm a nervous rider, except we call my husband Slow Rider, so he's the one person I'm not nervous in the car with. And actually, we did that drive from California to New York during the pandemic in our Airstream, and it was enlightening to see the country from the ground as opposed to just jetting over it and, you know, a commercial airplane. And it felt like the more we were further away from city centers and universities, the more we saw, believe it or not, the more we saw flags for Confederate flags, flags for the president at the time, 45. I mean, this is a few years ago. And it just felt like there was a lot of disenfranchised people clinging to the rhetoric of nationalism and taking America back. And I never really saw such racism so blatant and such disregard for the other. And I hope that we will grow, and with people like you out there representing common sense and rights for each other, that things will come back to some form of normalcy. I appreciate you for everything that you do, and I'm so happy to know you. And I honor your time, and it's been a privilege to learn more about you today. Is there any cause or issue that you want to share with the listeners before we sign off and give you your day back that matters to you?
Well, I feel like most of my causes are wrapped into WAVE, the organization that I volunteer so much for. And so it's waveforall.org. And because we're immigrants, gun rights, women's rights, election. So it covers all of the things that I care about. It's not just a single focused organization.
Awesome. Well, for you out there who want to get involved politically or care about the causes we've discussed, that would be WAVE, Women for American Values and Ethics. So thank you so much, Audrey. I look forward to seeing you again in the future.
Thank you, Deborah. It was a pleasure.
This episode of Deborah Craddock was hosted by me, Deborah Drucker. It was produced by Lee Rocker with co-production and editing by Gideon Brower. Our amazing music was performed by Amy Nelson and Kathy Guthrie of Folk Nuke. Be sure to rate and review this episode wherever you listen to podcasts. For more Deborah Craddock, check out deborahcraddock.com and our Instagram at Deborah Craddock. That's D-E-B-O-R-A-H Craddock, like Democratic. Until next time. Political is personal.